The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Government has signed off on a ban on evictions to run from the 1st of November until the end of March, meaning that if a tenant is issued with an eviction notice from next month until the end of March 2023, it cannot be implemented until April. However, there will be exceptions for those who don't pay their rent or who damage a property. Now, to discuss whether or not the ban is constitutional, I'm joined by Assistant Professor at the School of Law at Trinity College Dublin, Dr. Sarah Hamill. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, first of all, in simple terms, a temporary ban, whatever about the nuts and bolts of it, is that going to be constitutional?
My opinion would be that it would be constitutional, given the temporary nature, and that's a key aspect of it.
So if the government introduces this and it passes, it shouldn't be, well, it will be subject to challenge perhaps from the landlords, but it should pass that challenge.
I would expect so, given sort of existing case law and the limits that the Constitution places on property rights.
Now, if the government then attempted, for example, to extend that ban, which is temporary until the end of March, what then?
Well, then we'd be in interesting territory, because it would depend very much on what that ban looks like and how far it goes and who it applies to. Because what is interesting about the ban in its current form is it's really a ban on no-fault evictions. And that messaging needs to be really, really clear so that people understand who it affects and who it doesn't affect.
Okay. The question is, if the government decided under pressure from the opposition, for example, to keep on extending it, at what point would it be deemed to have become semi-permanent and therefore would not survive a challenge?
Well, I mean, that is very hard to say, partly because this is a ban on the recovery of possession, which is one of the rights affected. Now, if that were also to run alongside, say, stricter rent controls and a ban on rent increases, then I think we'd be in territory where a constitutional challenge might have more grounds for success.
So it would be a combination of restrictions on the right to private property that would perhaps give hope to those who would attempt to overturn these measures?
Potentially, but I would say given the circumstances, any chances of successfully overturning the ban at present are very, very low.
Now, let's talk about fault-based and no-fault evictions and the difference between the two.
Great. So fault-based evictions are where the tenant is at fault, and kind of the classic grounds are non-payment of rent. And you'll see that the ban on no-fault evictions discusses willful withholding of rent. But other grounds of fault-based evictions are, say, damaging the property or failing to abide by your lease obligations.
There was something mentioned the other day that if the property was used for purposes other than those laid down, people might say, well, yeah, I'm actually working a lot from home now and I'm doing this, that and the other, and maybe I'm a small business and I'm dispatching my goods to customers from the premises that I'm renting. How would that be impacted?
Well, I mean, it would depend on the exact terms of the lease. Now, obviously, people have been working home a lot more during the pandemic. So I think the sort of the standard office worker working a couple of days from home, that would be totally expected and acceptable. But running a business, having, you know, people coming and going from the property, that would be obviously more disruptive and probably would not be covered by the lease.
Now, you're probably not expert in the proceedings of the RTB, but if someone decides not to pay their rent willfully and the landlord gets wind of that after the first month, by the time the RTB gets to work on this and the whole case is processed, this temporary ban would long since have expired.
Yes, well, that's actually a separate issue, Pat. That is an issue to do with the actual regulation and enforcement of the regulation. So there's definitely scope for the government to make improvements in that particular area, but I would see that as a separate issue from the constitutionality of this particular temporary ban.
Yeah. No, because whether it's meaningful or not to the landlords and why they might be protesting would be the fact that the process to evict a tenant who doesn't pay rent is so lengthy and onerous that, in a sense, this temporary ban until the end of March might be a nonsense.
I mean, it would potentially be a nonsense for landlords in that unfortunate situation of a tenant not paying rent, but they're not covered by this temporary ban anyway. So I would imagine that any proceedings currently in process where a tenant isn't paying rent would potentially continue, although the exact wording of the press release is a little unclear on how it's going to apply to tenants who are financially struggling.
And that's the point, that it's a willful withholding of rent. But if someone says, well, look, I would pay it if I had the money, but I don't have the money, therefore I can't pay it. It's not that I won't pay it, I simply can't.
Yes, and on that point, we really do need further clarity from the government on how those particular individuals are going to be protected. And obviously here, you'd have to balance with the landlord's interests. And I mean, one of the big problems is that there simply isn't anywhere else for those tenants to go. You know, there's a shortage of affordable housing. There's a shortage of housing full stop, in fact.
Yeah. So the question of whether or not the government will pay the rent to landlords as part of this provision, that will remain to be revealed in any text of the bill. So currently what we are talking about, therefore, is the ban on no-fault evictions. In other words, a landlord saying, I want my property, get out. And that's the only reason is given, for example, use by a family member or the sale of the property because they just want to get out of the market.
Yeah, there's a number of grounds of no-fault eviction in the current legislation. The ones you've mentioned, the landlord intends to sell or the landlord needs the property for themselves or a family member. There's also substantial renovations where they have to get the tenant out in order to do them. So those grounds of no-fault eviction are being suspended by this ban.
Now, any eviction notice that has already been served, that will continue running if it's not due to be valid until after the 31st of March. But if it were to become valid sometime in the intervening period, it would be paused until the 31st of March.
That is my understanding, although the government is, I think, still working on how to actually stagger the end of this temporary ban so there isn't a glut of evictions come the end of March.
Okay, some of the text coming in. Any landlord with half a brain will be running out the door and selling their property. The cards are now stacked even more against landlords, and with the looming prospect of Sinn Féin getting into government, the prospects become even more daunting. I was a landlord in Galway, charging €800 for a two-bed apartment. We sold up and got the hell out of it. It was the best decision we ever made. The constitutional common good is different to a social good. How is the provision applying to a tiny number of people common? That's an interesting constitutional question, Sarah.
Well, what I would say there is that housing is vitally important for an individual's health and well-being, and insecure housing or inadequate housing can really affect a person's ability to function socially. It can cause health issues, which obviously add to the burden on society through healthcare costs, through their inability to properly contribute to the economy. Mm-hmm. And so I do appreciate it. It looks like it only affects a small number of people. But given that housing is actually a service and landlords are service providers, it should be highly regulated. Now, there is scope to certainly improve the regulations, but that is where the sort of the social good comes in there, in that how it kind of does affect everybody in that way.
I don't think our texter is, arguing that the social good is not important, but the constitutional common good. The question is whether or not that provision would apply to something that is not a general problem, but a problem confined to those who are currently renting and are in difficulty.
I mean, I would say that it would, on the basis of how a sort of a glut of evictions would affect society more broadly. And that is what we have to pay attention to here.
All right, Sarah, thank you very much for joining us. Dr. Sarah Hamill is Assistant Professor at the School of Law at Trinity College in Dublin. Some more of the text. We were due to sell the property to fund the completion of a self-build. Now the government have absolutely ruined our hopes of completing the build on time. More cost, more stress. Well done to the Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil Green government. Everyone keeps saying that we have to balance the landlord's interests, but the landlord's interests are not being addressed at all, says that texter. Well, now, up to 300,000 people in Ireland have osteoporosis, with women over 65 having an increased risk of the health condition following menopause. October the 20th, which is today, marks World Osteoporosis Day, the call to women over 65 to prioritise bone health. Now, I'm joined on the line by TV personality and Irish Osteoporosis Society Ambassador Mary Kennedy. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah. Now, I know you've got a very busy day at the moment. We won't go into that, but unless you want to. But you want to talk about osteoporosis and how some people are more vulnerable to it and how perhaps you can head it off at the pass.
Well, women are more vulnerable to it, particularly after menopause. And I suppose I'm speaking on behalf of women who are over 65, because, you know, the impact that osteoporosis can have on your life in these precious golden years, and on the lives of your family and your loved ones, if you do have a break or a fracture, is absolutely huge. And the reality is that you don't know you have osteoporosis until you have osteoporosis. So the important thing is to be very vigilant, particularly post-menopause, because the drop in estrogen leads to a loss of bone density. And you just have to prioritize that aspect of our health. Because if the pandemic has taught us anything, it is that life is so precious. And you mentioned that I have a busy day. I have a new grandchild. Now, who wants to, as of Tuesday, and who wants to kind of not be able to run around or to play football in the back garden with a precious member of the next generation of your clan and your tribe? So it is very important. Actually, what's recommended is that women should kind of have their shopping list that we all have with regard to health at some stage in the year, where you check on breast health, you check on your bloods, you check on your cholesterol, and you should also check on your bone health.
Now, how do you do that? How do you know that your bones are fine or perhaps are weakening because of osteoporosis?
Well, the way you do is you go to your GP, and when you're having your bloods and your cholesterol, you say, I'd like my bloods to be checked for bone density as well. But also, the Irish Osteoporosis Society, which is www.irishosteoporosis.ie, they do, they're so helpful. They have a risk assessment test. You can go on there. You can find out what the important issues are, and you can be directed to look after your bone health. People may not know that the CEO and founder of the Irish Osteoporosis Society is a woman called Professor Moira O'Brien, who is just a huge advocate for women's bone health. And she is a healthy 89-year-old. She'd be 90 on her next birthday, and she's still working away and considers this to be a very important issue.
Now, I remember talking to Professor Moira O'Brien over the years, and she's been big into, athletes maintaining very good health. She was an expert in this field long before, we knew there were experts in it. She was one of those. And I'm sure she exercises regularly to ensure her own bone health. But there's a stat that's a bit frightening. One in five women over 60 will die within 12 months of breaking their hip.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's pretty stark.
Yes, it is. And it's the thing about osteoporosis is, Pat, that it's preventable, it's treatable, and it's manageable. So it's really a no-brainer. In 2019, there were 4,000 people in this country hospitalized because of osteoporosis, and 69% of them were women. So it's really, the message really on this World Osteoporosis Day is going out to women, to just we deserve it, we're worth it. We need to include that in our self-care. It's all very fine, going off to spas and salons and things like that, but this is the basic, and this is going to make a huge difference to your life.
Now,
and it's so simple.
We know that exercise obviously helps improve bone health, but if you have it, and you mentioned that you don't know you have it until you have it, you have a break that reveals a brittle bone, but can you improve it? If the condition is already set in, can you improve your bone health?
Well, Definitely. The message coming out from, I'm not a medic, but the message coming out is that it is treatable. But, and the obviously early intervention is key, but yes, it is treatable. And the information around all of that you will get from your GP, from your health centre, and also from the society, which, by the way, get very little help, and they're always, welcome. They always welcome donations. It's a wonderful organisation for women, and women should support it.
Well, I know that load-bearing exercise is very important. It helps to build bone health. And I suspect that lifting a grandchild and hurling the child in the air will certainly do wonders for your bone health, Mary.
Yeah, but also even walking, Pat, well, that is true. But you do notice, I mean, you know, there's a reason why you have children when you're young, because your energy and your physical strength is not as it was when you were 20 and 30. But you do want to keep it at its at a premium point, and that is really what's important. But walking, just getting out there, putting one foot in front of the other, you know, a little bit. I like to jog, and it's really it's important for my mental health, but also I know for my physical health. All of those things are very important.
Well, Mary, thank you very much for making the time for us today. Mary Kennedy, as you know from the telly, but also Irish Osteoporosis Society Ambassador. Mary, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.